And on Culture File, we're letting our fingers run once more along the Naturalist bookshelf with Paddy Woodworth. This time, Paddy has been rereading the work of perhaps the most celebrated of the current harvest of nature writers, Robert McFarlane, whose recent Underland struck deep with contemporary readers. But for Paddy, it's McFarlane's 2007 book, The Wild Places, that we might most usefully reach for now.
A sense of wonder lies at the heart of Robert McFarlane's relationship with the natural world. And wonder echoes like a bell through his exemplary writing about landscapes, their plants and creatures, and their people. Once wonder has been chased from our thinking about the land, we are lost, he writes, in the wild places. This 2007 book records his journeys to far-flung corners of Britain and Ireland, and how they reshaped his own thinking about what we are talking about when we talk about wildness. McFarlane's accounts of the quirky particularities of his encounters with summits and salt marshes, moors and forests, and hollowways, these last are the ancient sunken roads of southern England, they're always engaging, and every adventure is artfully interwoven with erudite but accessible mini-essays on questions provoked by these landscapes. McFarlane's reflections roam across many aspects of literary, natural and social history, from woodland ecology to wave motion, from the night walks of Samuel Taylor Coleridge to the horrors of the Irish famine. But each path of inquiry always leads McFarlane back to the central importance of exercising our sense of wonder. Speaking of the work of Rafe Bagnold, a rather obscure expert on the dynamics of sand dunes, McFarlane writes, information for Bagnold was not a way to summarize and close down the landscape, but instead a way to make it more astonishing. Science, for him, refined the world into a greater marvellousness. McFarlane's own work could hardly be better described. There are lots of places one wants to go in talking about Robert McFarlane. There is his playful and luminous collaboration with the illustrator Jackie Morris in The Lost Words. This is the spellbook whose success has been the best revenge against the Oxford English Dictionary's shameful decision to cull words like acorn, buttercup, and kingfisher from its children's version. Then there is his monumental recent book, Underland, where this celebrator of wide open spaces and lofty heights plunges us on the most unlikely but exhilarating odyssey beneath the surfaces of our planet. And there is much, much more. But I think it's particularly interesting to go back to the wild places at this moment in our culture, when concepts like wilding and rewilding have become so current in environmental conversations. When Jack London wrote about The Call of the Wild, he was pointing us towards remote places where people, or at least people like us, appear to have made little or no impact on the land, and certainly have no contemporary presence. And this is very much the kind of wildness that McFarlane is seeking out at the beginning of his journeys in the wild places. He sees himself following the footprints of early British and Irish monks who sought out hyper-isolated spots for uninterrupted contemplation of eternity, but where their own rich nature literature suggests, the blackbird's song often spoke more clearly to them than their church's liturgy. McFarlane is a formidable, though modest, outdoorsman. He repeatedly strides into landscapes that would daunt most of us at the outset. Halfway through the book, however, his pursuit of the harshest, least inhabited places hits a wall. Spending the night on the grim summit of the inappropriately named Ben Hope in the far north of Scotland, he realizes that he felt no companionship with the land, no epiphany of relation, This place refused any imputation of meaning. It is a fascinating pleasure to follow him for the rest of the book as he discovers new forms of wildness, from the miniature jungle in a fertile grike in the Burren to a scrap of wildwood in, of all places, Essex. He learns that wildness is, as he puts it, a process, something continually at work in the world, something luminous, tumultuous, green, joyous. And he continues, this was wildness quite different from the sterile asperities of Ben Hope, and perhaps, I thought, for the first time, more powerful, too. He learns from his friend and mentor, Wildwood and Waterlog author Roger Deakin, that wildness is everywhere. He recalls, with barely restrained heartbreak, how Deakin's untimely death ended their happy wanderings together. But Deakin's last lesson to him, he suggests, was to become an explorer of the undiscovered country of the nearby. While MacFarlane clearly remains drawn to distant and challenging places, he has clearly learned to cherish the wildness in, as Aldo Leopold would put it, his own backyard. And it's no surprise to find that he has also been gently assisted by his little daughter, Lily, who still knows full well that there is wonder in every blade of grass.
Paddy Woodworth there on Robert MacFarlane's 2007 book, The Wild Places. Why not order it in an independent bookshop, most of which are open again since Monday. And if you'd like to hear other stops on the Naturalist bookshelf, check out Culture File on Spotify.